Hey y'all, time for Tomes of Terror again. We're talking about another haunted house novel today. Again, just like the last one that I reviewed, which was 12 Nights at Rotherhouse by J.W. Ocker, this is sort of a haunted house story, but it also kind of has a twist to it or a different take on it, which I think is kind of cool because as I mentioned in my last review, haunted house novels are probably my favorite subgenre of horror. And, you know, even though a lot of them kind of have a lot of the same tropes and stuff like that, I do feel like there's still a lot that can be done with it. Haunted house is just scary because it's your house and it's like you can't go anywhere and, you know, it's haunted. So today we are talking about the 2004 novel. Why did I say this book was from 2004? It's actually from 2014. So Nyctophobia by Christopher Fowler. Now, Christopher Fowler is a British writer. And he's written a shit ton of books. I could not believe. Like when I went to his Wikipedia page, I think he's written something like 50 novels and like shit tons of short stories. And he's won all kinds of awards. Mostly known for thrillers, I think. This is definitely more a haunted house, like a supernatural type of thing. So I would not call this a thriller by any stretch of the imagination. Before we really get into it, I have to point this out. This is not, this is like such a small thing, but for some reason, this just delighted the shit out of me. I don't know if the hardback has this, but look at this. So the book's called Nyctophobia, which if you didn't know, means fear of the dark, essentially. Now, so the first page is just black with, you know, all the things, but look, it's like all black pages, just black. And then look, it's like getting lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. Like for several pages and then it's black again. And for some reason, I mean, it was a little thing, but you guys know how I have a thing about, because I talked about this when I was talking about that Grady Hendrix book Horror Store, which looks like an IKEA catalog. I don't know. I just really like little touches like that because I'm a graphic designer and I just really like, it's very, very satisfying for me when the theme of the book and the look of the book are kind of, you know, that they take the time to do something like that. So now this book, this is one where I feel like I'm gonna have to spoil it because it's really hard to talk about if you can't spoil it, like what the deal with the house is, what the thematic thrust of the story is, what it symbolizes. So I think what I'll do is, as usual, if you don't want to know jack shit about the book, then obviously this is not the thing to be watching because I'm going to talk about what happens in it. So there'll probably be mild spoilers in the beginning part. But I will probably spoil the ending just so I can kind of talk about my feelings about it. But I will warn you again before that happens. So if you want to hear kind of like a plot breakdown and hear a little bit about how I felt about it before that, and then you can turn it off like before I spoil what happens at the end and, you know, when you find out what the deal with the house is. So I'm just like warning you ahead of time, but I'll warn you again before it happens. So this book is basically the main character whose point of view we see everything from is this young woman. I don't remember if he says how old she is. I think I got the impression she was in her mid to late 20s. And her name is Callie Shaw. Callie, which is short for Calico, because her mom is an asshole, which we'll get to in a minute, because that's kind of a little bit part of the story about her backstory. Callie has had not a very happy life. Now, evidently, when she was a child, her dad molested her, and her mom didn't believe it, and essentially chose the dad over her. So throughout her childhood and teenage years, and even into her early 20s, I think, she had a lot of problems. She developed anorexia. She started self-harming, several suicide attempts. And I believe that she was in a mental hospital at some point in there. And her mom, who, as I previously said, is a total, total douche, never fails to remind her how much of a failure she is and that crap you said about your dad. And she's just a terrible, terrible person. I didn't mention too that Callie is British, just like the protagonist of this, but most of the story takes place, almost all of the story takes place in Spain, where evidently Christopher Fowler is also British and lives in Spain part of the year too. So this is kind of like him writing what he knows, I guess. So Callie actually has, I guess she went to school to be an architect and she was really, really good at it. And for a while she worked at an architectural firm in London and she's really kind of a big city girl. She's really into that kind of stuff. She has a bunch of friends there and whatnot because she's kind of got her shit together. But then it turns out that the firm that she worked for went under during an economic downturn. And so she was left at loose ends. Like, she didn't really know what to do with herself because she felt like she had just gotten her shit together. And then there was this huge setback. Now, right around this time, she goes to this party for one of her mom's horrible upper class twit friends or clients or whoever. And she meets this intriguing and almost too good to be true Spanish man named Mateo. Now, Mateo is older than her, I believe. I think it's 18 years older, but he's still, you know, he's not elderly or anything like that. But he's like 18 years older than her. And he's quite wealthy, very good looking, very charming. And he was married, but I guess he was divorced. And he has a 9-year-old, I think she's 9 or 10, a daughter named Roberta that they call Bobby, who is a delightful child. Now, Callie and Mateo fall in love. And so Mateo wants them to move to Spain, since that's where he is from. Now, he has some kind of business where he imports wines and liquor and shit like that, like, into different countries or whatever. So he's, like, away on business all the time. So he's kind of one of those urbane, like, European businessmen who's, like, all young and handsome with, like, nice-fitting suits and all. He's that kind of dude. He's also a little bit old-fashioned and a Catholic. You know, not like, you know, Stone the Adulteress Catholic, but he's, you know, he's not that bad. But Callie is reluctant to tell him too much about her past because at one point when she was a teenager, because of all the bad shit she was going through with her family and whatnot, she ended up getting pregnant. She got an abortion. And as a result of the abortion, she is afraid that she has become infertile. And because Mateo wants to start a family, even though he already has a daughter, he wants to start a family with her. And she is afraid to tell him that that might not be in the cards. So she's kind of still keeping a lot of things from him. Now, interestingly, their relationship seems perfect. I mean, he seems like the perfect man, other than being a little bit old fashioned. But like I said, not in a creepy, like, cranky kind of, you know, you suck kind of way. It's not like that. He's just very gentlemanly, you know, very old school gentlemanly. So she agrees, since, you know, nothing's going on in London, and she thinks that she's going to hate living in this kind of remote place in Spain. But as it turns out, he finds this house, although he kind of makes it seem like, because they look at a bunch of houses in Andalusia, I think it is, and he has kind of picked out this house for her, but kind of makes her feel like it was her decision. You know what I'm saying? So they find this house called Hyperion House. Hyperion? Am I pronouncing that right? I looked it up and now I can't remember. I can't remember if I'm pronouncing it right or not. It was like a Greek god or whatever. So this house is really rural and it's really, really unusual. Now, the most unusual thing about this particular house was that the dude who built it, he wanted the whole entire house for there to be essentially no shadows or no darkness. So it's all this, like, it's the descriptions of it are really good. Like, I could picture it in my mind. It's built kind of up against a cliff face, like right out in the middle of nowhere. It's like a mansion, essentially. And it's kind of all windows. And the way that it's constructed, it gets the sun, like, through it, like going all the way through it all the time, like all day long. So there are no shadows anywhere, like during the day. And then there's a housekeeper who lives there, is also a gardener, but he doesn't figure into the story all that much because he doesn't really come into the house for reasons which will become clear later. But the housekeeper is under very strict rules because she comes with the house. You know, the family that lived there for a hundred years or however long it was, you know, they had all of these you know, the relatives that lived there over the years, and once the last one died, there was some kind of will or behest or something like that that keeps these housekeepers and stuff living there. So she lives there, and there's all these clocks in the house, and as soon as all the clocks go off, she turns all the lights on in a rotation. Like, she does it every day because the house is not supposed to have any darkness in it ever, you know, at any time, like except when you're sleeping and shit like that. Now, the dude that built this house did this because his wife suffered from nyctophobia, a fear of the dark, which Callie herself also suffers from, you know, because, as I said, that's one of the things from her traumatic upbringing or whatever. So it's weird, though, because it doesn't really factor Callie's nyctophobia doesn't factor as much into the story as I thought it might, but I might get into that a little bit later. So they move into this house, and as I said, Callie was an architect, and she is fascinated by the house. She just can't believe, and she figures out, like, when she goes into this one atrium or something, she's like, did this house used to be an observatory? Because the way that this atrium is built, she's like, that's very, very much like a lot of old observatories were. And she starts getting fascinated, and she wants to write a book about the house and, you know, maybe get back into her architecture, get back into her work. So she starts kind of looking into the history, and there's really not a lot about it, but she does find out that it was built, or so they think, as an astronomical observatory at some point. Now, that's not the only weird thing about the house, is that it was built so that there would be no darkness or shadows. There is also another half of the house. I don't know if it's an entire half, because I think it says that it was like a third of the size of the main house. But at the back of the house, like right up against the cliff face, like there's only a few inches between the cliff face that it's built behind and the back of the house, there is essentially a mirror of the front of the house, like all the same rooms and stuff, but they're smaller and the furniture is shittier, but it's all, everything, the layout of it is the same. The furniture is the same. It's just like shittier versions of it. So the back half of the house is like the opposite of the front. It's smaller, but it never gets any light at all because like the windows are covered up and like the back of it is up against the cliff. And so like the sun never gets to it. So it's almost kind of like this weird, smaller, meaner, shabbier thing. And when she eventually opens it, and it's really weird because the housekeeper is really cagey about why that's back there, because Callie's like, well, that must be the servants' quarters. So, but the weird thing about it is that the housekeeper seems very, very reluctant to give Callie the keys to those rooms. Basically, she's like, hey, we never go in there. It's locked up. There's nothing in there. It's all yucky and dark. And why on earth would you need the key for it? But Callie's trying to like drop her nuts and be like, hey, you know, we own this house now, and I don't really want to just live in part of the like two thirds of the house. I want to know what the hell is back there. It's like, we could put Mateo's wine cellar back there. There might be all kind of fun shit going on. So she keeps pressing the housekeeper for the keys, and the housekeeper seems very, very reluctant to hand them over. And Callie starts to get really suspicious, but finally, she essentially, I don't want to say she bullies the housekeeper into it, but she essentially puts her foot down and was like, look, you know, I need the keys to all of this house. This is our house now. Deal with it. So she finally goes into the back of the house. Now, as I said, she suffers from nyctophobia. So she tries to go during the day, like with a flashlight and everything, because it's really, really dark back there, even in the daytime, because all the shutters are, you know, painted shut and whatnot. So she goes in there, and at first she just thinks she sees things like weird shadows and shit. But as the story goes on, she starts to see people back there. And one in particular, which is kind of like a woman who looks all ragged, like bedraggled and stuff, and has this weird China mask on that has like a permanent smile on it. So there's kind of a time during the book where you're not really sure if these are ghosts or if she's going nuts because, you know, she had a lot of trauma and a lot of problems in the past and maybe she's just wigging out. And so you don't really know. She starts to believe, because she kind of starts out as a skeptic, as a lot of people do in these types of novels. And she starts to believe that these are the ghosts, because she eventually starts seeing more than one. She sees a male one. She sees a few kid ones. And then she's like, well, these must be the ghosts of the family that used to live here. I think they're the Condamine family or something like that. And she wants to figure out why they're still here, why they're haunting the house. The weird thing about it, though, is that these don't really seem, they're not particularly ghostly. Like, they look like flesh and blood. They look like real people. They act like real people in the sense that, you know, they're not going through walls or any shit like that. They seem like they're real people, and they seem like they're always in there. Now, for a while, she kind of thinks she's imagining it, but then Bobby, Mateo's 9 or 10 year old daughter, she sees them too, and they start talking about it, and she doesn't seem all that upset about it, which seems a little weird, but there's a reason for it that you find out later on. So as I said, from this point forward, it's probably going to be kind of major spoilers, so you might not want to continue any further if this sounds like an intriguing book. I will say, I liked this book. I didn't love it. There was something about it, and it's really, really hard to put into words. I think it was so much... the story, the house itself, the description of the house, the history behind the house, I found that intriguing enough to carry me through the story. Like, I did read this in only a day or two, so it's not like it was a slog or anything. I think what I found a little, I don't want to say off-putting because that's too strong a word, but I think what I found was that there wasn't really a character that I could grasp onto. You know what I mean? I feel like Callie, the main character, who everything is from her point of view, I kind of felt like she was a little underdeveloped, maybe. Not shallow necessarily, not unlikable. But it's just, I didn't really get a sense of her as a person. You know what I'm saying? She just seemed like a narrator. She didn't really have much of a personality, I guess. And there was something about that too, that I didn't really understand. I didn't really also get a sense of her and Mateo's relationship. Why does Mateo love this woman so much? Why does she love him so much? It wasn't like, I mean, he seemed like a nice dude, but he was kind of gone a lot of the book. And when he was there, he also seemed a little underdeveloped. So I definitely felt like the characterization was something that was really strange to me. It was almost kind of like the characters were sort of keeping me at arm's length, if that makes any sense. It's really, really hard for me to describe what I mean. And I haven't read any of Christopher Fowler's other stuff, but apparently his shit is like really popular and he's won a lot of awards and stuff. So maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just approaching it in a weird way. But it does seem like the characterization, the backstory, like as I mentioned before, Callie's backstory with her dad, sexually molesting her and her self-harm and her suicide attempts and her nyctophobia even, is mentioned a couple of times, but I don't know. I guess I expected it to be more, I don't want to say integrated into the plot. It is relevant to the plot. It just seemed like it wasn't, I don't know, like there wasn't enough of it, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's just my perception. And I don't want to say that, you know, that I prefer books that like smack you on the face with everything, like, hey, she was abused, hey, it means this, hey, this is a symbol of that. It's like, it's fine. I don't mind ambiguous, I don't mind low-key, I don't mind understated, but I did kind of feel like the characters were kind of a little distant. You know what I'm saying? So that's like all I'm saying. So as I mentioned, at this point, I'm probably just going to spoil what the deal with this house is. So it turns out, so as I said, if you don't want to know what the deal with this house is, why it was built, and, you know, what it symbolizes in Callie in particular's life, then turn it off now because I'm going to spoil it. Okay? Okay. So essentially, this house was built sort of an observatory, but it was also built by, the guy that built it was kind of an occultist. And so it had to do with, I think it was Ursa Major. I think they built everything, and the position of the clocks inside the house was in the shape of that constellation. And they had actually, I think that it turned out that what she thought was an observatory, in the sense that there used to be a telescope in there, even though she said that doesn't really look like a telescope mount, it actually turned out to be a camera obscura. So the guy that built the house was essentially projecting the constellations down on this, so he could like draw them out and, you know, make his house kind of conform to the constellation for some occult purpose. Now, it turned out too that the front part of the house, which was the lighted part, he actually did build that for his wife who suffered from nyctophobia, and he wanted her to be happy there and her not to have to deal with anything that she feared, which was the dark. So he wanted the house to be lighted all the time, so it would be like a very happy place for her. However, at some point, he decided to build the back of this house that was all in darkness, and he consecrated it by human sacrifice. Him and some of his cronies kidnapped three little girls from the nearby village, hence why all the villagers are always like suspicious about the house and who lives there and don't like to talk about it, sacrificed them under the foundation, like before the back part of the house was built. Now, what the back part of the house is that when you live in the front, which is constantly in the light, everything goes awesome. You know what I mean? That's the happy part of the house. However, in the back of the house, there is essentially a dark copy of you that is getting shit on by life. You know what I'm saying? So as I said, this is, it's a supernatural type of thing. So you find out later on, like toward the very, very end of the book, that the people that Callie have been seeing in the back of the house that she thought was the Condamain family, and in particular, the one, the wife, who I can't remember what her name was, Elena. I think it was Elena. He thought, she thought it was her because like she had a mask on and stuff. But it turns out that it wasn't a ghost. It was actually a dark copy of her. The house made it so that it would pretty much take all the shitty things that happened while she lived in happiness and bliss in the front of the house. That's what the house was for. That's why the dude built the shit in the back. That was supposed to be like the shadow thing. This is where all the bad things go and happen to these essentially shadow people versions of ourselves, even though they were actually flesh and blood people from what I could determine. So all the bad shit will happen to them and you will have a wonderful, happy life and no bad shit will happen to you while you're in the front of the house, but you can't go in the back. However, because Callie was so taken by the house and was so taken by the mystery of what was going on back there and who those people were, she essentially fucked everything up. Now, there is a point at the halfway, right around the halfway point of the book, where you think that she has a hallucination that Mateo has been stung to death by hornets, because I think he's allergic. And there's a hornet's nest, like in one of the old buildings on the property, and all the hornets get out when they try to destroy the nest, and they sting him to death. Now, she thinks, and then, like, a few minutes later, he's back normal, like, why are you freaking out? It's like, you know, nothing happened, I just got here. So you think that it was a hallucination, and that's kind of fueling your belief that maybe she's losing her mind or whatever. But it turns out that at that point, Mateo actually did die, but the house was trying to keep her happy, so it gave everything back to her. But at that point, Mateo and Bobby also ended up dying later as well. So the house was trying to maintain the illusion that her family was still alive, but because Mateo and Bobby ended up dying in real life, they were still there and they were still flesh and blood, but they could not leave the house. They could pretend to leave the property, and sometimes they told her that they would, oh, we're going into town shopping or we're doing this or the other, but they couldn't actually leave because they were creations of the house. So that's what this house did. So I think that the whole theme of the book is that Callie, I think her downfall was that because she had had such a shitty life leading up to when she met Mateo, because when she met him, she couldn't believe that everything was going so well or that everything was going so smoothly. So she just kept waiting, as a lot of people do. This is a very human thing to do, that you almost feel like you don't deserve shit to go this well. So you keep having stress that like bad shit's gonna happen. You know what I'm saying? So she had that kind of mindset, which kind of made her, you know, open the back of the house. And essentially she was trying to let out what she thought were the ghosts, but then she found out later that it was actually her. So the house ends up being a symbol of the darkness or the bad shit that happens to you in your life and how it's always like back there. And it's almost kind of like asking the question, is it better to live in an illusion where you are entirely happy and nothing bad happens? Or is it better to know about that dark shit going on? You know what I mean? It's very much like a dichotomy that the book presents. Now, I thought this was a really cool concept. I mean, I don't think I've ever read any other haunted house concept novel that was like this, where the house would essentially make a dark copy of you that bad shit would happen to. It was almost like the picture of Dorian Gray, now that I'm thinking about it, except in the flesh, you know what I mean? Because in that book, you know, obviously Oscar Wilde's novel, you know, you could go and be forever youthful and you would never die and you could do all this degenerate shit and you would still look young and gorgeous and nothing bad would happen to you, but your painting was getting more and more like shitty looking because it was taking all the ravages of the shit you had done. So it's kind of like that, but on a person. So there was a thing of her. There was everybody that lived in the house at whatever time had a counterpart. The house would make a counterpart of them that would be in the back, you know, the dark mirror of the house. And they were actual flesh and blood people, but they looked all fucked up and starving and feral, and you know, some of the kids were feral and all this other kind of stuff, just because that was like all the worst possible shit, or the shit that was going to happen to you, bad shit that was going to happen to you in your life would happen to them instead of you. So you were able to, as long as you stayed in the sunny part of the house, you were allowed to maintain this illusion and your life would be amazing and awesome and all this other kind of stuff. Because it was like other shit that happened like through there. Like I said, there was the weird scene with Mateo getting stung by hornets and then suddenly he's and dying and then like suddenly he's okay again. So I was like, what the fuck's the deal with that? There was also a weird scene where like her horrible mother, who, as I said, never failed to mention like what, how she had fucked her life up. And it's like, what'd you do to your hair? And like, you're so skinny. And you're, you know, she was like that kind of person. She came to visit, and her and Callie had a fight, like they usually did. And then much later on, even though she had talked to her mom after that, she was like 6 weeks after her mom's visit, she found her mom's rental car like in a ditch or something, like on the property. It was all covered up by tree branches and stuff. And she was like, "That's really weird." It's, you think that she would have mentioned that she wrecked her rental car or would have come back to the house. But she's like, well, I've talked to her since then, so she didn't die or anything. So that was really weird too. But it turned out that later on in the book, you found out that Anne, the mom, had died at that point. I don't remember if she died in the, I don't think she died in an accident. What ended up really happening was that Callie and Mateo killed her because she was being a jackhole, and they just pushed her car down there so no one would find it, I think. Now, another thing that I will say about this book, and like I said, I did like this book. It was solid 3.5 stars. I enjoyed it. I really, really loved the concept of the house and how it was described. I could really like picture it. But other than the characterization being very, I want to say understated, it's just very distant. The people didn't come alive for me. They almost seemed a little bit like, even Callie, whose point of view we're seeing everything through, I never got a sense of her. I couldn't see her in my mind's eye. I didn't get a sense of her as a person, as a character. She didn't seem all that distinct. So there was that too. And I feel like some of the shit that happened in the book, it was the way it was described was a little vague. Like even when I got to the end, because I've seen some other reviews of this and most people seem to like it as much as I did, but some people really didn't like it. And they're just like, what the fuck happened at the end? Because the end is very ambiguous, and open-ended. So, and that pissed some people off. It didn't piss me off particularly, but I did get, there was a thing where some things happened that in hindsight were pretty monumental or pretty important to the plot. But the way they were written about, it was almost kind of like you just skimmed over it, like what, like it didn't seem all that important. And like I said, I'm not dumb. I don't need like signposts being like, hey, ding, 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 this is significant or anything like that. But it just seemed like the way it was written was very, like it's very, very understated and very low key. So even when monumental shit happens, when significant shit happens in the plot, it's almost kind of like it's very easy to just kind of skim over it and not register. You know what I mean? But that said, after I finished the book and figured out what the deal with the house was, what the house was doing, which again was a little bit vaguely described, so I'm not sure if I'm explaining it correctly, but I'm pretty sure that the house makes a copy of you that takes all the shit that happens in your life, like all the bad stuff, and it takes away from you so you can live your life in an illusion in the front of the house. I think that's what that was going for. You know, I don't know. It's just really, really hard for me to say. So this is the only Christopher Fowler novel I've read, so I don't know if this is a thing where a lot of his stuff is this kind of understated. It's very British. It seemed very British to me, like just in a way that it seemed very reserved, I guess is the word that I want to use. And I've had kind of the same thing with, as much as I love, you know, Ramsay Campbell, who's another, you know, very classic British writer, that's something that I've found with some of his work as well. So maybe it's just kind of a British thing. And I did live over there for a little while and, you know, so you'd think that I would be used to it. But some British writers have kind of a very chilly or a very detached kind of way of approaching characters, approaching, you know, the emotions of their characters. So it almost seems like you can't, like you're watching them through a window or something. Like you can't really get inside their heads. You can't really. So I kind of got a little bit of that from this. But as I said, I really, really liked the concept of this, and it was a really compelling read. I just love the way it ramped up, like, all this weird shit that was happening that seemed like it was unrelated. But then as it went on and you started putting all the pieces together, this is definitely one, as I said, and I say this about a lot of them, that have these types of endings, that this is definitely one that needs maybe a second read, because I feel like you miss out on so many of the details because they don't seem important at the time. The shit that happens, it seems, as I said, as you're going along, it just seems like, oh, that's a weird thing that happened, and it seems unrelated to other weird things that are happening. But when you find out at the end, and it kind of all gets tied up together, I'm not sure if it was completely tied up, because I'm not sure if I got the entire gist of what was going on. But once you know, once you have an idea of what the house is and what it does, I feel like if you go back and read it again, you would probably pick up on a lot more. That's probably the case with a lot of books, honestly, especially ones with kind of, I don't know if I'd call this a twist ending necessarily. I guess it kind of is. But ones where that have unexpected endings, maybe. Like, I think it's better to read them two times before you really get a good grasp of them. So I probably will be reading this one at some point again in the future, because as I said, I did enjoy it despite, you know, some of the things that I pointed out. So I guess that'll do it for this review of Nyctophobia by Christopher Fowler, and I'll see you guys on the next one. Bye.